morning, sir.
Fine, ma'am. Am I audible?
Yes, yes, you are, sir.
Brian?
Correct, sir.
Good morning, colleagues.
Good morning, Chair. How are you?
I'm good, and you? Chair?
Thank you
so much. Brian, may I ask you to make the agenda for the meeting before I welcome our guest. Thank you. These are the agenda the items for today's meeting. By the Inspector General and police. Consequently, the briefing by the DMV would then follow immediately after. So, what do I do? And the briefing will then be with the minutes at the end of the discussions for the minutes. And then we take closure. And to the reordering of the agenda.
Agree, check.
Agree. And very much no objection. Thanks. Bye. Right, you may then welcome the Policy and Patrol Secretary for I know that they have apologies to convey to this meeting, but let me start with the apologies on the side of members. Brian, are there any apologies?
Indeed, they are, Chair. We have an apology from my
presentation, as I said, a briefing by the Inspector General and the military police. over to you, colleagues.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and my appreciation for of life. Thank us that we combine our report and statistical and both the Inspector General and the League. We then also lastly compete with the Adjutant General, that is the General Ministry. On the third item on our agenda, and that agenda is going to deal with the measures that we have put in place to combat corruption and fraud, but then it will also go into detail in terms of giving you a information on the investigations that have been conducted and how far they are and where we stand to them at this point in time. So without the better much ado,
Mr. Wright, General Maseta.
Good morning, dear Chairperson and members of the committee. I would like my professor to continue with the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Defense, honorable members of the Audit Committee of the Department of Defense, Secretary General, and other members on this virtual meeting in our midst. I'm very General, and I'll just go straight to the aim of this presentation. The aim is to provide the portfolio committee on defense.
Sorry, General. If you are, you report directly to General Buhari?
Yes.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Thank you so much. Over to you. My apologies.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Can I continue?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. I'll go direct to the aim of this presentation. The aim of this presentation is to provide the portfolio committee on defense on the measures in place to combat corruption and fraud. I will also reflect on the status of corruption and fraud and finally address the regulatory expenditure progress report. The scope of the presentation will address the background, corruption and fraud prevention plan, whistleblowing, capacity detection investigation, awareness education, multidisciplinary team, forensic bodies, corruption and fraud report plan, line, status of corruption and fraud cases by the Minister Court, sentences
imposed by the Minister Court. General.
Am I over?
Yes. This report is classified confidential. Is anything confidential in it?
A recorded incident of corruption in the transportation
I can see Mr. Mafanya's hand. Mafanya, may I invite you to make your comment? Ask your question.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the insightful presentation that is given by the leadership there. Now, I consider this corruption and fraud action plan that has been hatched since 2012 to date, where there are some results now taking place in 2021. And taking into consideration that the ref is the newly appointed one now, the question is, there has been quite a lot of activities that took place, and taking into account what the AG's report then alluded to, there was almost 3.something billion that was presented to us by the AG, and now lately it became the 2.9 irregular expenditure, that is from the AG's report. Now, I tend to look at the number of cases that went through you and take into consideration the, you know, the term that is always used by the AG, whereby they talk about the irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Now, in between those big words that are used, there is an element of corruption that is not followed, because it is only covered by a blanket word, namely fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But there has not been a probe whereby we tend to go deep into what happened with the kind of irregular expenditure or the wasteful expenditure that happened within the DOD. Then there around that issue, I find it very odd to tally your cases against the background of what we have lost already. For me, it doesn't make sense. Now, and then you look at the punishment or the actions used as a deterrent, where you charge people from 1,000 to 6,000. And then for me, it's not harsh enough, because you keep on having the very simple, you recycle the same people who have been found guilty. At some point, the dismissals are quite minimal, suspensions and all that. At some point, people have been suspended with pay, having committed such heinous crimes in the organization. Taking into account that the DOD itself, we are called the most disciplined amongst all the government departments, as we expect, not clean governance in terms of the people. So those are areas that are a bit much more concerned about. And then in your presentation, I see as big and criminal activity, then there's a problem there. And then number two, I see also on the issue of your recent even your multi disciplinary team that yields some results, whereby there's money that is that there's corruption that built, and then there are cases of particular companies that are abused. But you're almost talking about things that just not and then we never faced any disciplinary COVID crime, but going forward, nothing happens to you. So just my comment as well as some clarities there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Brooker.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to thank you for the presentation. But Chair, I want to add on the corruption and fraud plan. And they reported the plan was effective from April 2012, but currently the plan is under review. Now, Chair, I want to ask, did they identify the loopholes in that plan, and is that the reason for the review? But, Chair, I also want to know, what are the lessons learned from the plan, and how will they address it in reviewing the plan? Do they have the means to address it? For example, if it was manpower, they still did not finalize the HR plan. So, Chair, that's my first question. My second one, Chair, there was good progress in 2019-2020. Why was it successful in that specific year? And what are the challenges that they encounter for the cases not finalized? Is it a matter of cooperation from those who are implicated, or what is the problem? Then, Chair, my last one is on the investigation on 1 mil. It's finalized, and I'm glad that it's finalized. But what is the process that they will follow now? Because the situation at 1 mil for the refurbishment must be concluded.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think those were the two hands. So you generally you are not giving us the age analysis of the cases. You're not giving us the age analysis of the cases, so that we are able to assess the performance of both the Inspector General and the military police, because we were reporting on behalf of the two agencies. For example, where you even confuse me even more, where you people mention the financial in the year in which the case was reported to you, or you started investigating it. There are instances where you mentioned the year, but there are instances where you don't mention the year. I mean, you simply say previous year. What must I understand you to mean by previous year? Because I want to know how far back these cases were reported, or you started dealing with cases, and why it has taken you so long to complete or finalize your own investigation. So if you don't the exact year in which you either got to know about the incident, or you started investigating it, whatever it is, and if you don't get me the exact years, it's difficult for me to see how well you are doing with your investigation. I'm asking this question general, because the Auditor General said to us that your investigations are taking far too long conclude, and he says over 50% of the cases are more than 3 months. Sorry, are taking longer than 3 months. I understand that the cases that are taking longer than 3 months because other cases may be complicated and needing a bit more time. But there again, we still want to know the length that each case takes to be finalized by your team. This generally is critical because until those cases where you investigate irregular expenditure, for example, the department cannot even start to regularize that irregular expenditure until such time they have investigated and the investigation is concluded on the matter. So you are delaying the regularization of those cases, either by condoning it or by making people pay, you know, recouping the money if there was more money lost to the state, and or some other means. But with the delay, we can't even begin, they can't even begin that process. And so the cases now keep piling, because in the next audit year, the auditor general will not be reporting about the irregular cases of that year. Will also be giving us an accumulative figures of irregular expenditures over the period of time. But if they were cleared, they would then be removed from the list of irregular expenditures. In other words, they remain reported until such time those cases have been cleared by other means, so by the department, in terms of their regularization, procedures. So that is the major concern. But the other point has been raised, the lenient sentences that you are passing, and until we get an information and what were the charges and that attracted, for example, fines of between 1,000 and 6,000 rand. 96 of people who were charged and prosecuted, the fine, the sentence was given was between 1,000 and 6,000 rand. What is the nature of those offences where people are given such, you know, a slap on the wrist? So this information is, I mean, you is the reduction to a lower rank. And detention with the reduction to the rank, maybe I don't know, and the suspended imprisonment. So we don't need the names, but we want to see the offences that are common in the department that attract so much, and for us to make an assessment of how you know, deterrent the penalties that you hand down to us. I'm sure when you speak to us, you'll address those issues. The last point, General, because we're concerned about the number of years that it takes to investigate the matters, is it possible for you to separate cases? I mean, this is a military court. There are instances where you deal with, petty crimes and or people who disobey the orders, okay? But then there are instances where you deal with issues of fraud and corruption. We're not too much concerned about the fact that a fellow, breached the curfew time in the camps and was given a dismissal sentence, whatever it is, and or a soldier and disobeyed his seniors, and so on. But in the ordinary, you know, those ordinary, you know, type of things, I don't know what to call them. But our concern are issues of fraud and corruption, within the department. If you could separate those cases so that we can see that this is, I saw the table that you presented us, but is that all? Or you simply just picked the cases that have the highest amount and left some of them. Are all the cases that you are currently being investigated by your unit, or you've reported on some that you think that the committee needs to know about and left the rest? I think it comes back to the question that Mr. Mafanya raised, and that we what is reported as damages suffered by the department doesn't match with the report that you are presenting to the portfolio committee. Over to you, sir.
My hand was up, Chair, though it was late.
Let me check. Yes, Mr. Butler.
Thank you, Chair. My audible.
Yes, you are, sir.
Oh, okay, thank you. And good morning to you and members. Chair, I think you have largely covered me, but if in their response they can also interchange the common causes or the common factors or denominators in terms of these cases that causes delayment. You would know AG would report that the reason for his inability to make to conduct his work is because of a particular reason. He will always provide reason. For an example, lack of information provided. So if they can also take us into confidence that these cases are dragging long because of factors that are common, or what is it that they have established or find out as a common factor that causes this delayment, so that we can be able to get down to what really are the factors that actually are impacting on the investigation to take so long. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Mose. And now over to you, General.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Is it possible to zoom so that we can see the presenter? I know.
Okay. Chairperson and members of the committee, thank you very much. Chairperson, I would like to respond, and there are instances where I was not getting you clearly. I hope my colleagues did hear, and they will come in there. Chairperson, maybe I may start from the last one from yourself, when you were asking of, are these the only cases? Certainly, Chairperson, they are not the only cases. We just took an overview, snippets of some cases. The detail the Chairperson is saying would like to know what is the detail. I think maybe in the future we will come with that information. But also on the AG my colleagues to come maybe through the telephone in these cases to court and to court. With regard to I think it was the first comment by the member regarding the deterrence. Chairperson, we believe that I must say that the decisions taken by the court we respect those decisions, and I believe that maybe we will come in on this one. But
part of the meeting.
We lost them, Chair.
Oh, we lost them. Oh, thank you very much. Okay. I'm sure they are doing something about that. Thank you. And at any rate, we were going to ask them to come back to give us all the cases that they are investigating, not just the few that were selected, and the values. The image analysis of those cases, and they will indicate the cases that are court ready, and but they can't tell us about the you know, whether they are enrolled. Because that's the agent general's task to take us through, and yeah, and generally give us the crime statistics, and maybe periodically, and, I think we can agree that they feed us. Like the question Mr. Muta raised, what are the repeats, what are the cases that keep coming up in the department? So do we also ask the question why it is this type of cases that keep coming up? Because we have lost them, and then go back to them in further questions, and ask them to come and respond to those questions when we meet with them at the next meeting. Do you agree, colleague?
Yes.
Yeah, because we don't know when they are going to come back. And yes, Mr. Bafa?
Yeah, thank you. I think we have these matters in the past. And most cases whereby you get blame and where there is a pick and choose things that they think the committee would like to hear without giving a proper perspective, it becomes problematic. Number two, what we have learned is that when we do oversight vis-a-vis the presentation, they differ immeasurably. And it becomes just a talk shop of some sort whereby when we go deeper into things, we begin to find things on our own where we expected to get all this information from the channel. So I can see their beds.
Yes. All right.
Yeah.
Because you may then complete the statement before I go back to them, so that I
go back to them. Yes. So I'm saying the lessons learned from our side is that when we oversight, vis-a-vis the presentation that has been given to us by the general, they differ immeasurably. And it becomes criminal to oversee such meetings where we are unsure or we're not trusting any longer about the presentation. Taking, for instance, today, whereby we are getting, whether you're asking, is it all that we are giving us? They said, no, we picked up here and there for the purpose of a presentation. And that is not what we need. We need a true reflection of our statement on the ground. Thank you, Jay.
Yeah. Thank you very much. General, indicate when we want to come back and to deal with on that note, hoping to come back again to deal with, to give us more details on the cases. What you said.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I maybe the Honorable Professor, you know what question is going to be my next mark for this.
In the case in point that were opened in 2019 by the main hypothesis, assisted remote. That assisted shot from the office in court because of the nature and the amount that I was cannot investigate. Finally, the accused that we are dealing with individuals who cannot appear in the court. So, because we cannot find that the prosecution will have to take them to those kind of things to the specialized commercial court. So, the number of cases that you see here are just for the federal commission of
I assume that Master Committee assumes that all cases involving corruption, because corruption is between people from the external people and people from the department. Ordinarily, we hand it over to the SHS. At what point do you, besides those where it's clear that the core accused is a private person, you know, is a civilian. Then the matter must go to SAPS. What other cases that you take to the SAPS and so that we get to understand your threshold that if the case is up to this level, then even though they involve it's all members of the system because of the ABC.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on the stands of my colleagues. I'm Major General Minister, the Auditor General of the South African National Defense Force. Chair, to assist my colleague, Admiral Makoto, on which cases are referred to the outside, either to the NDA or the South African Police Ministry. Now, I want to first state that our military court has jurisdiction with regard to fraud and corruption cases. The first time when we referred the investigation to the SAPS happened when the military police does not have capacity or capability. Let me speak to the capabilities. When we look, let's say for instance, we need to do section 205 on all these things, and we don't have a criminal procedure act, and we don't have certain capabilities. MPA, Ministry of Police, by the power prosecutor, will say, you know, we need this information, and Ministry of Police does not have the capability. So we go out and seek assistance from the SAPS. When the matter will be referred to the SAPS. The second one is to follow in any case. highly, which is the only problem that is because we rely on them to do procedure, is the lack of capacity and capabilities within the military police and the divisions. Then has been dealing with case number one, which is the primary issue that they have and issue of the transport. And case number two, open, they will also now give case number one, it takes to case number two. What the investigation is the same. Then case, there is another case with that. I mean, another criminal issue will be detected. The same people will be spread over. For those pretty, I mean, and as such, that takes time and it is very in the military police and in frustrating the prosecution.
So we've got different branches within the military.
terms of the age analysis, Chairperson, that you raised of the cases that we are dealing with here, I think we have put it in accordance to what the AG spoke about first. If you look at the cases that we are dealing with, the terms of between 2015 and now that they are not completed. And most of those cases, fortunately, our investigation is completed. We are just now waiting for the courts to set their trials. I don't know if it should be fortunate or unfortunate, but the prosecutors want to be very sure with their cases before they the request or set the cases for trial because of the number of the amount of money that is involved in this. And it's our police capability in terms of our members. On one case, I think the one question we have to do is to still communicate on the number of years it takes to differentiate between cases of fraud and corruption. I think you can't determine how many years it must take. The investigation, prosecution will determine how quickly you get the information. That is just what statement. How quick do you get your specialist information in terms of your forensics? If you apply for 205, maybe if you spend a given date, maybe you'll get at least 6 months. It might take a year or a year and a half for you to get the information. So that it delays the investigation process, and when it gets to the to the court, they still want to verify the thing.
Because of the nature of the questions that require information that the team was not prepared for. And I understand the nature or maybe of the item on the agenda that made them to limit their presentation. Okay? So let's say we have another round of discussion with the team, that we are not disjointed in the manner in which we deal with this matter. And then maybe let's conclude. I see, but before I conclude, let me hear what Mr. Mare wants to say before we adjourn for another date and because of the issues. I will then indicate what issues that you need to focus on in your presentation so that instead of repeating your presentation through the questions from the members. Over to you, Mr. Mare.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. First of all, apologies for late joining the meeting, but I informed Brian about that. I just wanted to know, and maybe this is also then feedback for a next meeting, I think it's very important for us to know exactly the specialized investigation capacities that we have and those that we do not have, because we also need to know those that we do not have so that we can interact with HR and with the chief and the minister in the future. to make sure that at least we have got the capabilities and the capacities that we do require. Otherwise, I assume then, if it is any of those specialized cases where we do not have the capacity and the capabilities, that that will then immediately over to the National Prosecuting Authority or the, you know, outside the defense board. So that is possible either now or at a later stage. Get that feedback so that we know exactly, you know, what we have, what we do not have in terms of that. Thank you very much, sir. Or at a later stage, to get that feedback so that we know exactly what we have, what we do not have in terms of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. All right. So, Ajajilana. By saying that Ajajilana, I'm sorry, who just was that we need all cases of financial misconduct that are under investigation. That we need all kinds of financial misconduct that are under investigation in the department. And if I'm not clear, and I mean fraud and misconduct cases. And under financial misconduct and misconduct cases, but so that we don't leave anything
out. Which has got financial implication in terms of those cases, and just a line function board thing that has everything that has got financial implication.
I said
this must be part of it.
Financial misconduct. I said, Mr. Marais, financial misconduct cases, like SCOs, okay? And they are not limit the scope, the idea is that that would only
have but large chemical services and things like that. So I think that covers the last book. Because also, Chairperson, for instance, with a regular expenditure that is presented to you today, the total of amount of irregular expenditure is 2.8 billion. And the cases we presented on is 80% of those. And that 80% translates to 2.4 billion. So there are other ones that we are still looking at, which, you know, to be able to get to the figure of 2.8 billion. So there is sufficient work, and we just focus on irregular expenditure because that's what the group was. But we are quite happy to open it up even to the other areas that we have to do. So I think that this way of summing up the way forward is going to assist us then to be better and to prepare. But I think that one other thing as well was the one of the issue of capacity, because even our legal department is almost depleted, if I may put it that way, including those, and maybe we can also try to take the pictures and show where we are at and things like that. So that's what I would like to say, Chair.
So colleagues will then leave it at that. When I was summarizing that, you two come and address us on all financial misconduct, aka that would include, amongst other things, fraud, SCM, procurement, and other HR matters with financial implications. So we agree at the voting aside. One. And then and two, and we want to have of those cases. All right? And the values involved, the amounts involved in each one of them. And you indicate the status of each case. When the case is finalized, you indicate that this case has been finalized and court ready. When the case is under investigation, you indicate that the case is still under investigation. And then you also give us the analysis of your specialized investigations capabilities within the department. We know staff will have people visions and they're well resourced and they are then able to in the division and they are well resourced and they are then able to in the process develop expertise within each division because of they are specializing in the so you could give us a brief analysis on your capacity as it went you know the capability it is and investigation capability within unit relations with prosecution with SAPS and insofar as the cases you had and organocos, forensic investigation and of course get that for the adjutant general generally in, before the military court and those that are pending before the courts. I'm sure that too is under your responsibility, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what
they need. And the cases, and then you also give us maybe if the condition, what were the sentences? Those sentences that are what they are in respect. And that then comes to the question of the sentences because I am. I think that is all. That has been added in, I think it will be in May or June, thereabouts. So this will have a little time to.
Thank you, sir.
We'll have ample time to look into the matter. Thank you. So, colleagues, that then concludes our discussion, general and military policy. Let me thank the generals for their presentation. I think we are getting somewhere. Thank you very much, Inspector. You may be excused because I know you are other committee. Well, can we now move to briefing by the audit committee? All right, colleagues, we've invited the internal audit committee to come and present to us today, and we said this is going to be a regular thing, and maybe at least once after the audit general reports come between the. What the Editor General says is that risk management, control development in the department is the root cause of all the issues that the Auditor General is requiring attention at the department. And he said that the department does not respond with the required agents to having the control environment. He said that the department does not issues of risk and improving the control on environment.
members, we seem to have lost the chairperson. He is attempting to rejoin us. If we could just give him a moment.
Thank you, Brad. Fine.
Honorable Bukas to chair while the chair is struggling. Yes, Honorable Dukas.
Oh, yes.
Am I audible?
Yes, you are. Must I proceed with the meeting now?
Yes, please.
Because I'm also struggling, but I will try my best, Honorable Member.
Yes.
Thank you. Is?
Yes. Am I audible now?
Okay, you're back.
Yes, I'm going to switch off the video calling so that I'm audible. I was actually saying that the internal audit found that there were instances where officials were acting in positions without approved delegations and were payments made for office buildings that were not occupied by the department. In some instances, monthly these payments were higher than the contract price. Standard operating procedures or guidelines relating to financial reporting of accruals could not be provided by some units. A non-submission of accrual inputs for financial statements. There were instances where there was no proper segregation of duties in some procurement units. There are no proper skills transfer to take over from the service providers. The risk committee does not consist of external and independent members. Painting a gloomy view. So today we are meeting with you to look at these and the other issues. I mean, the AG says they made a finding that they could not, and that the AG said they were unable to determine the full extent of an irregular expenditure that was stated at 5.13 billion rand. So as a result, their scope was limited, and then they decided that they would qualify issues of irregular expenditure. So again, it points to the plan and the activities of the internal audit unit that reports to the internal audit committee. I said the sport now is falling on you because you have a responsibility to perform to ensure that the department functions in accordance with good governance principles. And the last point, which is concerning within the department, other delegation, financial delegation, to indicate what you know about the financial delegation in the department. The CFO will tell us that on a contract worth over 200 million rand, but colleagues, are we all on the system?
No.
We are all right. I am sir, but I hear nothing. Nobody.
Yeah. I'm also talking on the platform. But can't hear nothing.
Is it
we can hear it.
You hear me? All right. Okay, so I concluded my input. I now invite the Internal Audit Committee to talk to us. And I welcome all the members of the DOD Internal Audit Committee to this meeting, and and the internal audit unit. And I now give credit them the opportunity to the presentation. Over to you, sir.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. I think greetings especially to you, Honourable Chair, and the Honourable Members of the Petroleum Commission Defence Sector and all protocol of the. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm going to be going to the presentation. I'm going to try and share that if you can meet me. But I have my colleagues in the meeting as well today. So I'm delighted for the opportunity on behalf of the members to be able to share some of the insights, specifically talking to the area you asked us to present on the measures to prevent and detect financial irregularities. If you just give me one moment, I'm going to try and see if I can share my screen share so if we can be able to go through the presentation. But just as I'm going through the presentation, just quick, it's maybe popped up on the screen. Just one. My presentation channel?
Not yet. Yes, it's on the screen now. It's visible.
Thank you so much. Thank you for that. So, Chair, again, once again, as per for those who are delay, this is the presentation of the audit committee to take the committee directly on the measures we are engaging on to prevent and detect financial irregularities. I'll go to the next slide. In terms of what we'll be going through, the contents, we'll go to the introduction as to what we'll be covering today. Then I'll be introducing Chair the members of the audit committee. And then we'll go directly into the measures we have embarked on to prevent and detect financial irregularities. We'll take the committee through the progress to date on those measures, and then we will conclude. Just starting with the introduction, Chair, the audit committee basically is constituted at the OD in terms of Section 38(1A) Roman Figure 2 and Section 77 of the PFMA. And this is to be read in conjunction with the Treasury Regulation. And this is established the Audit Committee as an oversight body to provide independent oversight over governance, risk management, and control processes of the department. If you just give me a moment, Chair, to introduce the Audit Committee. We have been appointed with effect from October 2020. So it's a fairly new committee. And it's, as I was saying, fully constituted. Before then, there was a period where only two of our members were in position, but as of October 2020, we are full house. And the members of the committee chair, myself, Luyanda Manungu, as a chairperson. Also, we have Dr. Penze, we have Ms. Harry, we have Mr. Green, like an admiral, former admiral. And also, we have Mr. George Warner and Mr. Ndangisa. So these are our members, and I think with one exception, Dr. Penze, I think they're all present in the meeting, so they're here with each other.
I'm here, Chair. Thank you.
Oh, yes, Dr. Penze, thank you. Thank you. So we have a full house, Chair. All of us are here today to be able to give this presentation. Thank you so much. If, Chair, you allow me, in terms of directly responding to the question at hand, the measures that we are embarking to prevent tech irregularity. The first one, looking at one of the audit committee level of the we're going to ensure which actually the audit committee has to date and approved terms of reference, this is our charter, which are compliant with regulations and best practices. And this will allow us to functional and be able to execute our mandates. To ensure that we have proper terms of reference. That's one point where it all begins. And we've made sure that just to share with the committee, Chair, that those terms of reference have specific clauses to refer to, and if that state filling record, that the committee, for example, is authorized to request an investigation into any activity with this power that's identified in the terms of reference. Also, the committee has the right to spend that time and to be provided with the resources necessary to investigate attachment following due process. And what the clause chair that I want to share with you is a clause that talks to the committee being afforded direct and as well as EGSA and a town audit function. These are the most important emphasis that we have put in place to make sure that we can begin to deal with the preventative measures to detect as well any financial irregularity, is that we need to have a very sound charter, sound terms of reference that have an even power. You talk to the next slide, Chair. But if I zoom into the internal audit function as to how we position them to be able to assist, is that we review, Chair, and evaluate the effectiveness of the internal audit function within the department. In other words, because as we normally say, they are our hands and feet as the audit committee, that is the internal audit function, we have to make sure that they are as effective as we as they can be, because they are there on the ground on a daily basis. So we have to make sure that they have all that it takes for them to deliver on their mandate. How we do this, Chair, is by reviewing and approving the internal audit operational plan, make sure that it is risk-based and that it actually provides assurance on the effectiveness of internal controls, risk management, and compliance with laws and regulations within the department. Secondly, Chair, we make sure that we review and ensure that our internal audit function is fully capacitated to perform its responsibility. And this is a very important one, because if they don't have the right capacity, then the capabilities will be less than what we have to be able to deliver on this mandate. And therefore, the audit committee has to also make sure that we have a fully capable team of internal auditors on the ground to be able to deliver. Also, Chair, to share with you as to what our internal audit focus would be as well, is that they also must have an unrestricted access to all information and to make sure that they remain independent and that they are appropriately structured and appropriately designated in terms of their reporting line. What I mean by that is that we need to guard carefully their independence, and that's why ordinarily the internal function would report functionally to the audit committee, which is ourselves, and administratively to staff them. And this is to make sure that the lines of communication of reporting or accountability are well articulated, to make sure that they are free to be able to express themselves of any sort of finding that they may find on the ground. If I'm going to how we engage with AG to make sure that we have measures, again, to prevent and detect financial irregularity, what do we do, Chair? We review, as far as AG is concerned, and approve their annual audit strategy to make sure that their audit process is effective. And I mention all of these assurance providers because they are key in order to ensure that as the audit committee, we are effective. And hence, I started with internal audit, and AG alongside as well comes along. Also, Chair, what we do with the AG, we meet separately with them on a quarterly basis to discuss in committee some of the matters that they may not be comfortable divulging in an open forum, to make sure that they are able to bring those to our attention. An example is a matter, for example, that could be talking to any material irregularities that the department has to deal with, as is currently the case. Also, on a quarterly basis, we monitor progress by management, as that is in our engagement with AG, to make sure that they are fully implementing all AGFA's recommendations. And this is with specific attention, for example, on ensuring that progress in investigating all irregular and future expenditure is well timed and is in motion at all cases, to make sure that even consequence management that comes out of those investigations is properly implemented. Also, Chair, we monitor progress in terms of investigating all material irregularities that have been identified. Also, make sure that measures are taken against all personnel who may be identified as doing business with the department and also doing business with the state. And these are some of the key matters that would, as far as financial regulations are concerned, zooming into when we have these discussions with the AG. As far as management, Chair, is concerned, because they are the first line of defense, they are tasked by law to design and implement effective control measures. So when we engage with them, what we do, we review that they have in place fraud prevention framework. And earlier in the discussion, you'll see there was a reference to a fraud prevention plan, for example, that was dated 2012. What we'd make sure now that we're on ground is to make sure that that is actually reviewed on an annual basis to make sure that it is relevant to current development and that also it is implemented and that all gaps that may have been identified in the past that they are dealt with. Also, what we do, Chair, is to make sure that in order to ensure that there's a direct internal audit prioritization by management in assisting the accounting officer to determine whether there's any skills improvements to ensure that fraud-related matters are managed well. So this is the kind of engagement that we have with management as well to make sure that they have a full compliance fraud prevention measures that are on the ground and that all efforts are made to ensure that full capacitation and priority is given to recommendations that are brought to their attention as far as measures to prevent or to deal with the fraud-related matters. Also, what we do, Chair, is to evaluate the effectiveness of management's monitoring systems pertaining to fraud-related risks and the results of the investigation that would be coming from Inspector General. And we'll follow this to also whether they come from internal audit as well. And we'll take them follow through to make sure that even on the matter that have been handed over to the police or prosecutions, that those are dealt with until the very end. So that we make sure that all matters that have been brought to their attention of the committee are dealt with until we see consequences at the end. If I continue, Chair, on measures with management, also we review the effectiveness of the department's systems of monitoring compliance with laws and regulations and the results of those investigations, making sure that we follow up on disciplinary measures to make sure that all non-compliance is dealt with and addressed. Also, we review, Chair, the process of communicating the code of conduct to members and personnel so that we ensure that there's compliance with laws and regulations, whether it's policies, standard operating procedures, and everything that the department is expected to be fully compliant with. Also, Chair, what we would do is to review and make sure that all relevant anti-fraud and ethics management policies are in place. This is to make sure that the department is fully compliant with, for example, the public sector ethics management framework and what it would touch on areas of fraud and corruption to make sure that we are able to pick up on those or put measures in place that if there's any gifts to personnel or members, we're able to report to these and address them. If there's any, as a requirement, the annual declaration by members and personnel that they are done on an annual basis, and even conflicts of interest, that if there's members who are picked as having been business of the state, that there's proper processes followed to make sure that we can deal with those. And that's where there's areas, in some cases, they may start with the senior management in terms of vetting for even SPM personnel, that according to regulation, all vetting is done as expected. Just to take in terms of all of these measures, this basically builds the framework to enable us to oversee measures to prevent and detect. But in terms of where we are now as progress to date, let me start with the sector of defense, like that, in terms of what we've done. We've had in committees with sector, and in those in committees, she has been able to update us on measures that have been implemented to deal with cases of irregular and protest and even unauthorized expenditure and measures that have been taken to institute consequence management. We're very delighted to hear some of the concerns that the committee is raising because these are the very issues as well that would bring to the fore to make sure that these matters are dealt with in detail. The issue of aging, for example, the issue of making sure that we expedite investigations, the issue of making sure that we are seen to have in the process of dishing out consequence management. These are some of the issues that the committee would bring forward. Also, Chair, would obtain a link to the SACF and understanding the measures taken to respond to areas of material irregularity. Currently, the department has got material irregularities that have been identified, and the AG is being engaged with to make sure that the due process is followed. And this is the very matter that the audit committee would engage SACF to establish whether processes are being followed to respond, to investigate, and be able to address these matters because these are serious matters and they need to be dealt with expeditiously, and AG needs to be in concurrence that the department is taking them seriously. So that engagement we monitor very closely and look even at the investigation as they have been concluded to make sure that they are satisfactory in terms of the outcomes of what anyone from the outside independently would be expecting. Also, what we do here, we discuss measures in terms of resource and capacitation of our internal function. And for example, to give an insight, right now the department does not have, from the DOD side, a chief audit executive. That is a vacant position. And in terms of ensuring that there's full capacity, that is an issue that would be of concern, and the audit committee is busy engaging to make sure that that position is filled to give the unit proper leadership that is stable. And also this is to make sure that within the internal function, because there is an investigation or forensics directorate within internal audit, to make sure that that unit as well is fully functional. And this is an area investigative matter that is brought to their attention, or they come along as they do their work, not functional. And that is one of the areas we need to rebuild, and hence the work that has been reported by Inspector General. And that's where the capacity is. But we're more comfortable alongside what IG is doing to make sure that internal audit as an independent function that reports to the audit committee functioning is also fully capacitated to make sure that we look at investigations that that we have that come across our tables. Also, Chair, what we do with internal audit is we discuss the forensic investigations that they have conducted and concluded to make sure that management is responding positively in terms of implementing recommendations and more so the consequences that have been recommended out of those investigations. And the example in case was an asset management investigation that we were briefed on, and we're busy following through that to make sure that the recommendations coming out of that are fully implemented. In terms of our engagement with AG, we have engaged in chat, and what we've done with them is to obtain whether they are satisfied with the cooperation levels that they're receiving from management. In other words, once AG has said these are areas of material irregularity that DOD has to deal with, we have established and engaged AG as to whether they are happy or satisfied, and that process is ongoing and we're monitoring it, and that's why we had to hear from AG themselves, besides hearing from SACIA, for example, to make sure that AG is happy with the progress. Also, Chair, we have been in touch with AG to make sure that they keep us abreast of any reviews that they're doing. This is in specific reference to the interferon matter, for example, that we've agreed with them that when they conclude their review, they will be able to share their report with us, so that as a collective, in terms of oversight on matters of this nature, financial irregularities or potential, we're able to take on board their recommendations and follow through that management is indeed implementing those. So we're watching that space carefully, and we're waiting for the finalization of that report once it's been concluded. In terms of our engagement with the IG, we've met with them, and the reason for that was to obtain an understanding of their role and responsibility as a new team, to make sure that we can be able to place them within the DOD space, and we have understood their role in terms of anti-fraud and anti-corruption measures within the DOD space. And also what we've done, we've also zoomed in to obtain an understanding of the progress in terms of their investigations that they are conducting. And hence I was saying earlier, we're very excited to hear the comments coming through from the Honorable Committee Chair. And these are the issues that we'll be certainly following up as well, because these are of interest to us as well. Also, Chair, what we've done with the AG is to communicate our expectations as the Audit Committee in terms of them presenting to the Audit Committee on a quarterly basis. So we have a standing invitation to them to take us through the process that they're embarking on, the list, the register of all investigations, how far they are and how long does it take them, the very similar issues. And most importantly, to make sure that at the end of the day, these investigations are finalized as expeditiously as possible, and that recommendations that come out of them are fully implemented, so that we can be able at the end to see consequences. And that's how we believe that once the process is tied up with the efficacy required, the message will be out across DOD that we will not tolerate instances of fraud and corruption and animal feces. So therefore, the culture will begin to improve and change towards preventing these going forward. Also, Chair, in terms of engaging with the finance team and logistics, we've certainly had an engagement with them as well. And this was basically, we obtained an update on a quarterly basis, what measures have they implemented to manage and prevent irregular expenditure, fruitless and unauthorized. And this is also to make sure that they have put measures in place to identify. We've had the issue of incomplete irregular expenditure. So we've engaged with them and raised the issue of ensuring that we have to have control measures so that even before AG comes, we have identified all instances that qualify as irregular fruitless expenditures so that we can deal with them proactively without an outside party, AG, for example, identifying them. And these are the kind of discussions we've had with management. Also, we've asked them, Chair, to keep us up to date with investigations that have been instituted on all cases of irregular and fruitless expenditure according to regulations. So we monitor on an ongoing basis the investigations and the progress that's been made. Also, we've asked them, Chair, to keep us up to date in terms of the consequences that have been instituted against those who have failed to prevent irregular expenditure and fruitless expenditure. Because according to law, management has an obligation to prevent. So we mustn't even have it, but should it come up, then we have another duty to make sure that we investigate timely and that we bring to book those who have been found to have breached the regulation. In terms of engaging with the unit, which is actually responsible for risk management, and that falls within policy, strategy, and planning at DOD, what we've done with them is to engage them to make sure that they build sufficient capacity within the department for an effective risk management function, which will be able to bring forward early warning preventative measures as far as fraud and corruption is concerned. Right now, I would say there's a long way to go in terms of building the required capacity for the size of the department that we have. Hence, the audit committee has brought it forward that we do need to invest on that capacity so that early warning measures are put in place even before these matters come to be realized, to actually as a preventative tool that is proactively employed. Also, Chair, as far as the forces strategy and planning is concerned, we actually got them to appraise the audit committee on the progress they're engaging on in actually developing the department fraud risk register. And this is part of the requirement to make sure that on an annual basis, the department does a fraud risk assessment so that they can produce a fraud risk register. And this is again means to be proactive in terms of putting measures in place to prevent before this matter take care. And that's why the issues of awareness, which IG reported on earlier, would be part of that plan so that members are aware of the consequences of engaging in some of these irregularities. And the message is out, and therefore they can not even think about being party to such. Also, Chair, what we do is we've actually asked that unit to present us with a complete policy register. And again, we're worried about this fraud prevention plan, for example, that is dated 2012. So what we're doing is looking through the entire department in terms of compliance. So they're going to be presenting us with a policy register. We'll be able to keep track as to what policy is dated, is maybe needing review, and to make sure that once we've got all the policies up to date, that there's full compliance, that these are being implemented, and that all members are aware of their requirements and obligations to comply. And on a quarterly basis, we'll therefore be monitoring the compliance levels of the department to make sure that we keep them as close. Actually, in fact, not even as close, that we need full compliance. And in this case, it's one area where we can't even afford anything below 100% compliance. In terms of conclusion, Chair, as this audit committee, we are fully committed, Chair, I must mention, in employing all the available provisions in our terms of reference to ensure that there is effective oversight provided to the department and that the department is fully compliant with its regulation, aligning with the regulations, and that it has designed and implemented effective internal controls which are capable of preventing and detecting financial irregularity. And what this involves is ensuring that financial regularities that are actually well identified, that management implement effective measure to deal with the root causes, and that we are also implementing measures against plugging the gaps in terms of the control environment is dealt with. And last, Chair, because this is a, and Chair, I was saying, because this is a web chat, we are actually looking forward to working closely with all the assurance providers to make sure that guidance for the department would contribute ultimately to the prevention and detection of financial irregularity. On that note, Chair, to thank you for the opportunity to give us, and we will be able to take questions.
Thank you very much, Chair, colleagues. This is the presentation, and because we have another audit committee, and it's Lieutenant General Ngwebi. Are you still in the meeting?
Good afternoon, Chair. Yes, Chair, I'm still in the meeting. I hope I'm audible.
Can I invite them to do the presentation as well? And please introduce the chair, and the chair would then introduce the other members of the committee.
And colleagues, the woman is being asked. Term of office has come to an end, and Boomer's term of office supposedly has come to an end, but we've requested for him to stay around for some time for the other members. It's just been recently appointed, that he said, to stabilize. But I'll hand over, Chair, with your permission, to Mr. Wu.
Thank you, General, Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to make the presentation to yourselves on behalf of the Audit Committee of the Department of Military Veterans. I am going to introduce my colleagues who have been able to join the meeting today. Firstly is Ms. Fungai Moshowe and Mr. Mazui Shonge. Mr. Mazui Shonge, these are the two members who could make it for today. And in the presentation, Ms. Fungai Choe will take us through the Audit Committee presentation. She has been delegated to do the presentation, but we are all with her and support her, and we will be able to answer all questions as a collective. Thank you, Chairperson and members. With your permission, then I will ask Ms. Fungai Moshowe to present.
I guess that she's doing it on behalf of the Audit Committee, eh?
Yes, definitely on behalf of the Audit Committee.
All right, thank you so much. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can I just check if I'm audible?
You are audible.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can I also check if you can see the presentation? I have shared my screen.
Yes, I can see it.
Okay. Thank you. Very much. Honourable members and colleagues, my name is Guy, and I'll be presenting on behalf. Of the Audit Committee for the Department of Military Veterans. So this is just the 5 points that I'm going to go through on slide number 2. I'll just go straight to slide number 4, which is the mandate. Very similar to what we're looking at, but today, in terms of our mandate, we basically look at this policy critical errors. We look at the internal processes to detect that will function equally. Suffice to say that we are an independent structure and our function. The financial information, we look at any accounting and audit concerns, we look at legal and consistent of internal control. We are also based on where the internal audit, and I think my colleague from Jody. Also, I mean, yeah, wherein he mentioned that we basically regard the internal audit and our look at this following critical and so in terms of membership of the committee, these are the following members as well as the slightly generally supervisor, I don't mean to say the sense that we do not pay between 30 days, suppliers or creditors are likely to have interest, and interest is generally seen as prudent and not expenditure, because this is expenditure that we could have avoided and paid on time. Therefore, with the department, you know, not being able to pay between 30 days, directly impact on our prudent and not expenditure. We also have a challenge of investigations into irregular improvements and wasteful expenditure not being completed and lack of consistent management. And I'm going to zoom in a little bit more on that later. We also have a challenge of using a manual system, which are of course more prone to human error, you know, as compared to using an automatic system. But I'm going to zoom on that as well a bit later. In the next session, Chair, I'm going to look at what has management done so far, what have they put in place in dealing with financial irregularities. And I think more importantly, I'm going to touch on what are we saying as the audit committee, how do you use those systems and how do you use those systems. Chair, I think I would have mentioned earlier, and if I didn't, I do apologize, to say we are an oversight committee. So obviously, as for implementation, design of the systems and the controls is the role of management. However, ours is to provide oversight for one task thereof, and of course we do that through the external audit. So one of the controls that management puts in to prevent financial irregularities is maintain centralized logic. Logic is a system that's generally used in departments, which is a transversal system, used in the supply chain processes for the procurement of goods, services, and when I say intention, what it means is there has been work that the department has done, you know, but there has not been utilization of the system as yet. I think in our last committee meeting, management did promise action from the 1st of April 2022, which is next month, which is the next financial year, they're going to go live on the system. Now, for us as the audit committee, this is a concern, because you are saying, number one, we are paying for this log, we've been paying for this log system, but we've not started using it. Now, we are aware that, you know, management is doing work built up in attempt to eventually use the system. But as the audit committee, we are saying it's still a concern because we are paying for something that we are not using. And currently as well, using manual systems, again, as I said, it's prone to human error. It gives us lots of challenges, which even sometimes, you know, give rise to financial irregularities as well. So as we stand at this point in time, we are saying the department is not yet implemented the use of the system, but we believe that if we start using that system, that could assist them in curbing this financial irregularities. Chair, one of the things that they've also done as well is to improve on their policies. Particularly, I'll talk particularly to the SCM policies, where we are saying that they have come up with SCM policies, they've improved on them, and as the committee, we have reviewed the policies, we found them to be sound and solid. We did that in this current financial year, 2021, financial year, and we're saying from now going forward, these qualities should assist in terms of qualities. One of the challenges that has is fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is as a result of paying for an expense whose service is not needed. Like, for example, you pay maybe for flights or accommodation for housing expenditure. And the root cause of that, you know, has been a lack of a quality or a gap, wherein there's no document that we can use for one to account to say, if you do not show up for travel, yes, we can pay for it, then we've got to recover the money from you. So that's why I'm saying these policies now are now there. And we believe that in future that should assist us, particularly with our previous and local expenditure, which relates to North Shore, as I said, paying for activities, you know, and the person does not eventually show up. Again, one of the controls that management has also come up with is to strengthen their control environment, financial delegation, reconciliation, preparation of management reports and quarterly reports which come to the committee. And we're saying this is, you know, this can assist the department. For example, if you look at financial delegation, where we are saying not one person should be involved in the entire financial system, where, you know, you make a decision for payment, you're the one that authorized the payment, you're the one that reports the payment in the account book. However, I think a challenge that the committee will also see, which, you know, has been raised by management in our meeting, to say there's not enough capacity. So in as much as we've got maybe a good policy on paper, we then need to build up on our capacity to make sure that, for example, segregation of duties, it can only be possible to segregate of duties if there's enough personnel or enough officials then from the different functions. So we are saying on paper, yes, it looks good, but we need to then go on and beef up and ensure that we can be able to achieve on this one. And then the last point, Chair, is on regular risk and fraud risk assessment. And that has been happening where the department look at their risk, they update their risk, and in our quarterly meetings, we've been able to look at the risk register. And what we do is then, we then make sure that the internal audit plan addresses this issue. Risk assessment, and that has been happening, Chair. Now, moving on to the management is here.
Tembe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, Honorable Vickers has also touched on the issue of capacity that is not adequate in the department. But my question is on, is based on DMV, that's the Department of Military Veterans. Chairperson, I think you raised the issue on logins, that is a system to be used in the department. But they are saying now the system was paid, but is not in use, and they'll start utilizing the system in 2022. So my question is, why do we need to wait until 2022? Isn't that something can be done, I mean, to speed up the employment or the filling of vacancies, getting the people with adequate skill to start running, I mean, the system? Because as it has been presented to us that the manual system has opened the room for a number of errors to take place from now. So if maybe they can tell us the good reason why we need to wait until 2022 as from now in 2021. Also, Chairperson, on the presentation of the system, when the system was, I think it's not that the system was just put in the department. I think the presentation was done to the department. And before, I think, the contract was signed, they were supposed, I mean, to look to it to see if they have the capacity to use the system. How can you employ, I mean, how can you buy, say, a truck, but you don't have the truck, you still have to employ the driver of the truck. So I think there's something that maybe they must explain more, why they had to sign the contract of that lobby system whilst they were aware that the staff in the department were not having the adequate skills. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks. Colleagues, thank you very much. Can you pretend as if the departments are not represented in this meeting? This is our meeting with the audit committee to make us understand what are the challenges in the department, and when the challenges relate to work within their competence, what are they doing? How are they dealing with them? So that we capacitate ourselves. Let's engage with the audit committee more and note issues that will raise when the department is before us. I don't know, so that I don't want Gwebi, General Gwebi, to come and respond. We're now dealing with we're talking to the external they're internal auditors, but they're independent of the department. I don't know if my approach, colleagues, helps. Let's pretend as if they're not in the meeting. I don't go to General Gwebi in the meeting. And I've excused the effective because I was actually not expecting her to respond to the stage, because it's our own engagement with these bodies. Okay, can you just limit to that so that we spend more time with them and on them? And then, thank you very much.
Chairperson.
Yes, sir.
Chairperson, no, what I'm saying, Chairperson, I think, I mean, the audit committee had a meeting with the department in regard to these, I mean, issues. I was asking if they did engage and ask what are the reasons. If they did not, I mean, ask the reason why they allow these things to happen, I would be able to say, yes, they did not ask those questions to the management.
Thank you very much. I think your question is sustained. And colleagues, Mr. Marais?
Thank you very much, Chair. I will focus only on DOD's internal audit presentation. I've got a few very simple questions, and basically it deals with the reasons, or most of the reasons that we were told is part of why there's constantly and every year a qualified audit report. And that is specifically with regards to defense intelligence, access to information, audit information with the Department of the Defense Intelligence, and then specifically the Special Defense Account. Now, every year, since I've been part of this committee from the previous parliament, it's a regular and consistent reason for qualifications is the fact that some of the Auditor General do not have the clearance, classification clearance, so they cannot access, and it's different persons, and then obviously they are silent, they cannot share that information. Now, with regard to the internal auditor of the DoD and their capacity and capabilities, they can experience the same issues, whereas we would have expected from them as the first line of defense, if I can use that phrase, to have access to all that information. Can I basically ask them, the first question is whether they experience any challenges with regards to access of information, with regards to Defense Intelligence and the SDA, because that is the first line that we must address. And then if they experience challenges, how do they manage to overcome that challenge and making sure that whatever they present onto the auditor, to the Auditor General, is basically capturing all those challenges and reasons? And then secondly, one of the matters that we have, I think, heard and experienced as not only frustrations on the ground, but also possible opportunities for fraud and inflating invoice amounts, and that is centralized procurement. There's been many calls for decentralization of certain procurement or products up to a certain level, and that seems to be a huge problem. And then people taking shortcuts, and that leads to internal audit challenges and audit the general qualifications as well. Whether they can just respond to that, I'll appreciate that very, very much. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Any other? All right, does not look like there's any other hand. And let me invite, but before I invite them, I'm addressing myself to DOD, Audit Committee. Have you not experienced with the way the financial delegations have been done in the department? And I did raise the point that in one meeting we had the CEO, and the issue on the agenda was a procurement worth more than 250 million rand. And we were surprised that to learn that the CEO had nothing to do with a procurement up to 250 million rand. And have you seen that as a problem? And if yes, what is the problem? And what are they saying there was a reason for it, and so on? And then the number two is a financial management system. It was reported to us that they are at least the DMV logins and so on and so on, and they are not migrating, and they are still manual and so on and so forth, that they are paying for the system, and but they are the promise to migrate and so on. At least we understand that they picked that up as a challenge. They do not pick the same. We have not picked same in DMV. I'm raising this because the CFO says they're still on manual. That's the reason why. And can you imagine to be manual when the procurement centers are spread across the provinces in a number of places? And to get information, and it takes ages. And we're told that is one of the reasons why they get qualified. And it's one of the risk areas, I'm not too sure, but you did not speak to that in your presentation. And I also once again invite you to crit-
critique the department so that we see through your eyes what the issues, what are the issues, and what do they give as reasons for having those issues, and if they promise to deal with them, and how are they dealing with them? All right, over to you. Let me start with DOD.
For those questions, my colleagues are here, and I'm certain they'll be able to assist and add in just framing up some of the responses. Chair, maybe just to start, basically the position of our presentation was to just share the groundwork in terms of building, putting together the building blocks of measures we're putting in place to make sure that we have the ability going forward to pull the specifics and the details in terms of what really concerns. So we didn't share those with you because we thought the way in which we were requested is that the committee is aware, but they're wanting to understand what are we doing in response to what they already know of. But we certainly, I think we've taken note of the interest in those details, and I think going forward we'll certainly make sure we include them. Let me start, Chair, by maybe the first set of questions that were directed to DOD in terms of the early signs that we have identified for an immediate impact. Chair, also to appreciate just the openness you're requesting so that we can be able to take each other into confidence of some of the areas that are of concern. We'll certainly touch on to those. But some of the early signs, Chair, I think the department is quite unique and everyone is aware of the fact that there's a very well-defined, let's say, defense side of it and the civilian side of it. And as an audit committee, we're an audit committee of the department. And one of the things that we have seen is that delicacy in how you deal with that integration of ensuring that the department can implement measures on a standardized manner right across is something that still needs to be rolled out successfully. Especially becomes relevant, Chair, because in many organizations, if you look at the area of procurement, which is where most of these financial regularities come from, that would normally be placed within the finance unit. Within DOD, it's actually resident within the standard side of it. So as you said, it's actually spread across all the various services divisions across the country for that matter. So just by that nature, because you have a situation where it's not looked at by finance, necessarily hardcore personnel, but it's actually looked at within the context of defense members. So there is a lot of working together that is required there to make sure that the normal financial discipline, financial controls, and financial oversight measures that one would normally find in one space, that those are certainly communicated, they are being implemented, and that they are monitored on an ongoing basis. So one area in terms of the early sign is that one is looking forward to encouraging a close working relationship between the civilian oversight and the defense side of it to make sure that the chief and sectors are able to run in this manner. Right now, it could be because we knew, but the early sign is that that integration or that close working together, there's still work to be done to make sure that we're getting the same kind of traction that we have from the civilian side. So number one of the things that we've asked is to make sure that as the audit committee, we're certainly able to meet also the chief of defense, because within the oversight structures, if we all the time just talking to SACDEV only, the message in terms of the concerns that we're having may not be transmitted in terms of the concerns we're raising necessarily to the defense side. And hence we're bridging these oversight structures to make sure that we engage SACDEV, we're also able to engage the chief of defense, so that with the voice and the authority that he has, if he sends, for example, an instruction to all the command structures, that will receive a different set of a tone, as we all understand, than it necessarily coming from the BF of Assassin. And that is one very important part that I think is important to understand, so that we understand the dynamics. I must add as well, in terms of the Assassin, this issue of systems is absolutely a big concern. I mean, one of the things we found when we got there is that defenders got legacy systems. They've got almost what you can call systems that they've had for decades. And those are not necessarily well equipped to be able to respond to the demands of what a proper controlled environment would like to have, let alone the reporting, let alone the segregation necessarily that are required where finance will be able to provide oversight. So there's a lot of development and work to be done in upgrading those systems, in getting them to be properly secured, and to make sure that even the issue of delegation is well monitored and is able to be dealt with in a fashion that is well coordinated and can even be monitored centrally. With the kind of systems that we've discovered on the ground there, that is a long way out, and huge investment need to be made to make sure that that is brought up to speed, and we're talking serious money there. Also, Chair, I would say in terms of maybe capacity, let me talk maybe closer to what we would have to deal with very seriously and urgently as well. The capacity within our internal audit function, there's an old issue there where the capacity of internal audit is not where it should be. There's what you call internal audit members who sit within a traditional internal audit function, but also there's internal auditors sitting within the Inspector General space. They are both internal auditors, but they're different. One is within a defense structure, one is in the civilian structure. So this need to work together and collaborate our resources even manifests itself within the internal audit structure. That we've got even actually more auditors sitting within the IG space, about over 100, just above 100. And we've got about 50 or so sitting within, let's say, the internal audit, as we would know it, within the civilian structure. And one of the issues that the audit committee has already identified is that we need to understand why we have basically two internal audit structures sitting within the same department that are not necessarily having the same combat assurance approach into making sure that the department is provided with effective internal audit select service. And these are some of the issues which therefore make the internal audit structure that reports directly to audit committee to not be fully capacitated, because some of the members are sitting elsewhere. And if you look at all the things we put in our presentation, is that one of the things we make sure about is that the audit committee directs the internal audit function to make sure that their plan on an annual basis is risk-based. We monitor that on an ongoing basis, and we make sure that it's talking to areas that are of concern. The plan of the internal audit function that's sitting outside or within the IG space, we're still trying to establish which oversight structure are they accountable to, who approves their plan, how do we make sure that we fully utilize that capacity to make sure that we add on to what seems to be deficiency on the other side. Because as a collective, I can assure you, we have more than enough capacity. And these are some of the nuances and sensitive matters, perhaps, that we all need to talk to so that we can make sure that we can deliver on our mandate. Maybe I'll be spreading through some of the questions. I'll be touching on the various as well. In terms of tracking the audit action plan, we have, as early as the meeting that we have in the last session, let's say as in February, one of the issues, for example, that we had there was management was meant to table the audit improvement plan in response to the AG findings. So there's something the audit committees we look at with enthusiasm, and it's a quarterly matter that almost like becomes a standing agenda item to make sure that management responds on time to all AG matters, especially areas that have qualification or emphasis of matter. But sadly, in the last meeting we had in February for DOD, even though we had requested that management tables to us audit improvement plan, but that was not presented to us. Of course, we expressed our concerns and management at that stage could only report verbally that they've achieved, for example, 75% of implementing AEGSA's findings. And to us, we want this in writing. We want it presented to us so we can be able to apply our minds as to which findings are we, to what extent have we dealt with the qualification ones, the emphasis of matter ones, especially the areas that were referred to earlier by Honourable Member Maurice in terms of the SDA account issues, which is the number one reason for our qualification. So I must say we're not able to engage on that because management did not present it to us and they only gave us a verbal update, which we referred back to say we need something in writing so to know that you're taking these matters seriously. And these are some of the engagements we have. Hence, would engage the sector directly on some of these concerns to make sure that the message is out of the concerns we raised and to get progress on what is being done. There was a mention of the risk and compliance accountability committee, so to speak. I'm hoping I'm understanding that committee well. But the response change in terms of how one would be working together within DOD, they don't have an independently chaired risk management committee as one would ordinarily have in many cases. You either have an audit and risk committee or you have a separate audit committee, which is the case at DOD, but then you would expect to have a risk management committee that is also headed by an independent chair to be able to give that objective guidance and view. So in terms of what currently exists within DOD, because it's almost like a management risk committee, they basically present their progress to the audit committee and we're engaging with them in terms of holding them to account in developing the risk expected deliverables to ensure that the annual risk assessment is conducted and objective risk register is conducted. And in this case, to make sure that a fraud risk register that is updated with monitored mitigation is tabled to the committee, but to monitor whether there's appropriate responses to each of the triggers that have been identified. And that is where I had said in our presentation that that is one area that they have not been able to present to us. And hence we've referred them back to make sure that at the next session they can give us an update as to whether they've done a fraud risk assessment, if they can present us to the fraud risk register and what then we can do in the new year to monitor that going forward. In terms of let me come to the SDA issue. We have had engagements because it was our concern as well when we started that AG feels they are limited. They don't have the ability to look into detail on their special defense account and therefore that's their major area in terms of qualification. Besides the irregular expenditure and incompleteness, hence we've raised a sharp with management that they need to demonstrate what measures they put in place to ensure the completeness of irregular and monitoring and investigations and consequence management. We've spoken to that. But in terms of this issue of limitation, I know you would understand it within the security cluster. I mean, this also ventures into what happens in state security. It also happens within, all where there's intelligence-related matters. This is a case we find in here, and we've engaged AG to establish whether they within themselves cannot be able to have members who are accredited or given that vetting level to be able to be allowed to engage. And the response for now is that they have not been able to have a success and therefore hence the qualification. It is a matter of concern and what we do, Chair, maybe to respond directly to that, is that we are not satisfied that there is this almost like a standing qualification that puts a stumbling block on AG's ability to provide insights and a view on how matters are being handled there. And we were, as the old committee, we're pushing to establish whether alternative mechanisms cannot be put into place to make sure that we pierce that veil. We have maybe dedicated persons within our internal audit, as I said earlier, if IG has got their internal audit unit, which is closer to defense issues, why can't we have some of those members who can then be dedicated from an internal audit capacity to be able to be given access? And similar for AG, why can't we have members who can be accredited so they are given access to give the assurance that we require? And it's those kind of engagements. So hence I was saying we have requested the audience, for example, of the chief, to make sure that we can raise those issues, however delicate they are, so that we can in the future look at dealing head on with disqualification, which has been there for a while, as the member correctly raised. And it's certainly a challenge, but we're not taking it lying down. We don't accept any restriction on information. If a certain unit cannot be given access, we were looking for measures that then can be able to allow a team that is rightly accredited to be given access. So you refer to issues of delegations and specific mention of the 250 million matter. Chair, I must mention that as part of the ordinary review, especially on an annual basis, since we came in October 2020, one of the areas that we'll be looking at for the new financial year is to make sure that financial delegations are reviewed and approved on an annual basis. So therefore, that's a matter that will be tasked with to review as part of the annual review. And since we're speaking on the third quarter, what would have happened is that the financial delegations that were in place for, let's say, the year 2021, would have been allowed to persist. But again, I think within the context of defense, that separation I spoke about earlier of, let's say, logistics or SPM-related procurement matters being well placed within the standard structure and not necessarily overseen by the finance, which is within the civilian, is one of the things that actually make it a bit difficult for that kind of oversight to be provided by a finance person. And hence, the training requirement, the sharing of how the regulations demand the delegations to be placed to make sure that we are able to have the delegations at the right level. What you mentioned, where, let's say, a senior person, a CEO, is not aware of some of these issues, it talks again to that separation I spoke about between the civilian and the defense side, which is something that certainly it needs to be worked on, and there's a lot of work to be done in there. In terms of the system, sir, I think that spoken to that, it really is the major cause concern. And hence the issues of happening in a certain corner in a military camp somewhere, for those to be transmitted and communicated all the way up to head office in terms of finance system, it takes a while. So the issue of manual system is absolutely a concern that to deal with is the investment that are required. Only old are leading the IT space, CMIS, to make sure that with GTO, they are able to put together a strategy that can look at how we address the operations on the ground to make sure that going forward we have the right systems that we require. So I think I've concluded response, but I'll open it up to you. My members want to add on methods I may have left out. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Can we do this in view of time, Mr. Mungu and the team from the team? Now, when you
happened, you know, because we want to, you know, you're an oversight committee, by an oversight committee. And, but our advantage is that we oversight you as well, and to us. So, then oversight, valve, or rather a third valve, if we look at the layers as it were. So all these valves, they are interdependent. You see, on there is information that the AG relies on you for, and there is information that we also rely on the AG for. And so, but all of us, we report to Parliament in various forms, okay? But in that way, may I ask us to have another engagement? You are new, but I know that Rear Admiral Green is not new, was appointed in 2015. I also know that Dr. Pienze is also not new, was appointed in 2018. In other words, those are continuing members of your team. I'm sure when we meet next, at least Dr. Pienza, I see her is on the screen, will be very much helpful in actually sharing with you from her own memory. I think she will retain some institutional memory as it were. So we want you to critique the department, and but remain within your name. Because unless you critique the department and cause them to move in a particular direction, as you are required by the law, it's not going to move. Why, for example, they present an internal audit improvement plan to you verbally? I mean, it escapes me, you know. And we wanted the internal audit action plan and or improvement plan. And so we rely on you to look at it. And I did ask a question whether it had been to you, because you were supposed to look at it. I can't remember what the answer was. That's one. And then number two, you are reporting that there are two committees that audit, that have an audit function with the department, but the two do not speak to each other. I mean, it's concerning. It does not have as yet the risk management committee. That must be headed by an independent, by an external person, or independent person. I don't know. That is for saying that you also said that you have not looked at whether the financial delegations have been reviewed, and if they've been removed, what do you pick up as your concerns? And you've not drilled down into the financial management system and what problems and it creates. I mean, if it is manual, and we can talk generally that this is a problem. But I'm sure as a person who's sitting from this side, who's frustrated about the department still operating on archaic systems, and they should be able to give us in detail what are the areas of concern with respect to that. And I think I will release you. I can see, I'm not too sure if there's a head to make a follow-up, but if it does make a follow-up, I would not expect you to respond today. Take that away with you when you are in your space, and after you have met with the sector and for the last more time to look into these matters and get them to understand the frustration that you are achieving of the defense force, will then come back to us and tell us that from the things you have picked
shared with them, and things that your predecessor has recommended to them as actions to be taken, what are they saying they are doing to address them? And we have a legitimate and present that to the portfolio committee. We are trying to put you, as I said at the beginning, on sport, so that we don't move far from each other when we are doing an oversight function. Could it do? Is it right time to release them and ask them to come back? And when we meet with them, I think around June this year, I'm sure by then they would have had their fingers on the pulse. We want the audit committee to have fingers on the pulse, that when we meet with them, they in other words, they volunteer the information before we ask them. But I understand the limitation that the agenda item was not clear, that this is the type of information we were looking at, and despite that's the reason why I will not insist much on us probing into the matters further until you coordinate the information for presentation to the portfolio committee. Shall I please go ahead, Pilar?
No, Chair, I think it's just the last time.
The last time, Chairperson, last time.
Thank you so much. Do you all agree that let's turn this item down? We're adjourning our meeting with the audit committee of DOD, and until we let them go away, look into these issues and put them in a presentation form, and these plus other issues that they will pick up and come and report to us in June thereabout. Agree? Thank you very much. So we release you, Mr. Kunga, and Mangugu, and your colleagues, and until we meet again next time. So let's ask them to respond. Mangugu.
Chair, just to appreciate again the engagement and the clarity on what you'd like in terms of the details, we certainly will put those forward and look forward to further engagements. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, sir. And you are excused. Now, let's go to DMV. DMV Audit Committee, Chair, please. The questions have been raised. Please respond.
Thank you, Chairperson and the members. At the center of the questions, one can defend one threat that the department does have capacity constraints, especially in finance and internal audit. And those two areas are very key in ensuring that we prevent and address all financial irregularities. Now, I'm aware that the department is currently reviewing its organization structure, and this should be finalized sometime this year or next year. Once the structure has been finalized, then the current capacity constraints in finance and internal audit will be addressed. Because internal audit is very key in tracking and monitoring the audit action plan that management has put together to address AG findings as well as internal audit findings. Without that capacity, it's going to be very difficult for internal audit to advise management on how well they are doing in addressing all of those findings. Similarly, with regard to logistics, I remember very well the biggest challenge that the CFO has is capacity constraints. He needs to do a few other things before logistics is fully implemented. But because of lack of human personnel, this cannot be finalized within the agreed time frames, hence postponement to the next financial year. In summary, capacity constraint is a big challenge for us, and in such time that this structure is finalized and we have the right people in the right places, we should be able to tackle those three areas, which is implementation of policies first, and also the issues around wages and other finance-related matters, and the audit action plan, which internal audit has to monitor and track for us. I'm going to ask my colleagues if they want to act in any of the three key areas that I've identified as being a core question. Colleagues, you can act.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to comment just on one question which was raised by the honourable member, where he said, you know, they want to start to see the impact, you know, of the old police committee. And I must have questioned that question because you are correct, you know, the impact has to be solved as the old committee. I want to say, ma'am, and change. That when you look at the last report for the 1920 financial year, they do raise the impact of management as well as the oversight committee. So if I just look directly on the audit committee, they gave us a yellow color, which basically means that they are providing some assurance. Ideally, in a perfect world, we would want a green color because then we are providing perfect assurance. So there is that impact that the committee is making. However, it's directly linked to management, because remember, as the committee, you make recommendations and you follow up on the recommendations that you just made. Unfortunately, you cannot implement the recommendations yourself. So the impact is there. However, there's still that concern in terms of the pace at which probably the department is implementing the recommendations. And I think there was also a question which said, why do we need to wait up until 2022 to use the login system? I was just going to say, the department is not necessarily going to wait until the plan is to go live next month. So it will be on the 1st of April, so they're not going to wait that much. But I think overall, you know, I think my question is covered in terms of capacity issues, constraints, and I think it's going to be throughout most of the concerns that we raised. Thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Fungai, I thought that was Chinese. Fungai. Thank you very much, and the chair of the audit committee. Can you do this? And you see, I operated in one environment, and things were not going well in the department. Someone is saving his mic on. Can you mute? Thanks. Things are not going very well in the department. But the Internal Audit Committee would just in one word and, such they've considered the thing and passed the report in order. And they were not very detailed. You could see that the Internal Audit Committee was not hands-on and was not doing what the law was instructing them to do. And so their report was not very helpful. I want to say that you have not finished your reports for this financial year ending 31st March. Can in your report be when you present the report or you prepare the report, please know that we have an interest in that report, and you must provide as much information as you possibly can, and because from now onwards, once it will be part of the annual report, but we'll treat it as a separate segment, and we'll deal with it separate from the report of the department. Can I get a commitment, Mr. Mangungu?
Yes, it's Willy Duma. I do give that commitment. We will ensure that we give as much detail as possible and respond to all the issues that you and your committee might have raised.
Thank you very much. We will meet with you and in October, November, after the minister has released the report. So you can relax for now.
About your report being detailed, maybe as left, okay. Colleagues, I think that takes us to the end of the meeting. We wanted to deal with the minutes. Brian, unfortunately, is not possible. We are now over time by 30 minutes. Let me thank the Internal Audit Committees, the DOD Internal Audit Committee, and the Internal Audit Unit members present, and the DMV Internal Audit Committee, DMV, and the Internal Audit members present for their engagement in this meeting. This is the first time that the Portfolio Committee is doing that, this where we meet with the Internal Audit Committee, please. But we'll make it a regular thing once a year and twice, at least once a year and twice or three times if necessary. So we want to leave it at that for now. General, thank you very much. You've heard the issues. And General Gwebi, and you now have the benefit of what the issues are. I'm sure by the time we meet, you'll have been in a position to meet with the people and flesh out the areas that they reported them as issues of concern. And with that, colleagues, is there anything before I adjourn the meeting? General, your thing is on. Can you mute, General?
Thank you, Chair. Goodbye, Chair. And yes, to the General.
Thank you very much, General. Colleagues, thank you very much. Can I then adjourn the meeting?
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.